Welcome to Dana's Radio Diner. We've got a great show planned for you today. I'm Dana Vernon.
And I'm Dick Vernon.
Dana's Radio Diner is about interesting people and places and subjects, and today we're talking to Jim Cunningham. He's a musician here in Butler, and we're going to let Jim tell you all about himself. He's established musician in the Butler area. So how about you telling us all about it?
Gee, whenever you talk about somebody being established, that usually means they're old.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up in Butler. I was born and raised in Butler. And my father was a very accomplished trumpet player in his own right. He played in a lot of pops groups and did a lot of church work. And when I turned 8 years old and attended Homemaker School, which is now a daycare center over there on Whitestown Road, the music teacher came to class and said, you guys next year will be old enough to take up an instrument, so go talk to your parents and see what you want to play. I went home and told my dad very enthusiastically that I would like to play the drums. He said, my dad at that time was laid off from Pullman Standard. They would work and then they would be laid off for certain periods of the year. He said, I'm laid off. I have a trumpet here. You will play the trumpet. And that's why I played the trumpet. And later on, my younger brother, when he came along, he wanted to play the drums. Well, Pullman Standard wasn't laying off as much, so my parents could afford a set of drums for my brother. So my brother got to play the drums. And he's also a very accomplished musician. So I started in as an eight-year-old. It was Center Avenue. We had moved into town. I was going to be in fourth grade at Center Avenue School. Sal Signorino was my first teacher. And I went in and just struggled with the instrument. And I would come home, I'd be frustrated, I would cry after I played. For one thing, the trumpet was a professional model instrument, was in a big heavy case. I was just a little 8-year-old kid. So I decided, I came up with this scheme, and there was a woods behind the house where we lived. We lived on Highland Avenue over in the south side. When I would leave for school, I would just stick that trumpet behind a couple trees in the woods and skip my music class. And then I would come home and I would pick up the trumpet, take it home, and my dad would say, how was trumpet today? Oh, it was great. I did real good. Well, Sal knew that my dad wanted me to be a trumpet player. And after missing about three of my lessons in school, Sal called my dad. He said, I thought you wanted your son to play the trumpet. And my dad said, well, I do. Why are you calling me? Well, he hasn't been here in 3 weeks. This is the third week he's missed. So I got home that day, and my dad said, how was your lesson today? And I said, oh, it was good. I did real good. And he told me what had happened, and I got in a lot of trouble, and I don't exactly remember what happened. I think I put it out of my mind, but my dad was a tough guy. He had been a prisoner of war, Stalag 17. He was shot down over Germany in a B-17.
Really?
So he was pretty strict with us. Very fair and very loving, but very strict. So we sat down and worked it out and realized that the case was too heavy. We went and bought another case. There was a little music store that opened up in Bon Air. I don't remember the name of it, but we got a little student size case, so that made it easier. And the other problem was that I really wasn't playing very well. I struggled. I was the worst one in the class that Mr. Signorino had.
That's hard to believe, knowing how you play now.
Well, what the problem was, I took a look in the mouthpiece. It was the old mouthpiece that had been with that horn. It hadn't been played for years. And the mouthpiece was almost totally plugged, because from the moisture and just the dirt that was in the mouthpiece when it was put away, dust and everything else, you could barely see daylight. So a little 8-year-old kid, I'd be blowing my brains out on that mouthpiece, and nothing was coming out. So my dad looked at that and he said, oh, look at this. We need to clean this mouthpiece. So cleaned the mouthpiece out. I went the next time for my lesson. I was the best in the class. I moved up from last to first because I was building the muscles and everything while I was playing that Mouthbeat. So I really started to improve, and I enjoyed it. I just liked to perform. I used to play as a young kid in fifth and sixth grade, and the neighborhood nights they used to have. Remember neighborhood nights
yeah.
the playgrounds had? I would always be performing and playing. But I still didn't really take it that seriously. I played Little League baseball. I like to do those kind of things. So it's always tough to get a young kid that age to practice.
I was going
to
say, a lot of young kids, it's tough for them when they have to practice, but they want to do other things.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was. But, you know, I was getting pretty good for a kid that age, but nothing spectacular. Well, my grandfather died when I entered seventh grade, and he and my grandmother lived in Tampa, Florida. My grandmother came to live with us after that because she couldn't afford to stay in that house by herself. And my grandmother knew that my dad wanted me to be an accomplished musician. And I think he saw me as the next Doc Severinsen. That's what he was hoping for. Never worked out that way. But so my grandmother approached me in the summer between seventh and eighth grade and said, "I have a deal I'd like to make with you." "Oh, what's that?" "I'll pay you 50 cents an hour to practice."
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And that was 1960. That was pretty good money. That
yeah.
was minimum wage. That was minimum wage, I think, back then. So my grandmother had official time cards that she made up.
Really?
I had to fill out the time cards and practice. And she would pay me 50 cents an hour to practice. Well, I practiced 4 hours a day that summer because that was $2
yeah.
that I could make. And for a kid that age, you get $2 a day, 7 days a week.
Wow.
I really made good money.
Yeah.
But something else happened. I really got good on that trumpet from doing that. And that was sort of an incidental effect. That's wasn't what I had in mind as a kid. I was just greedy and wanted to make the money. But I went into eighth grade. It might have been between eighth and ninth grade. I think it was. It was between eighth and ninth grade. So I went into ninth grade, and ninth grade was still junior high in Butler. Mm-hmm. And I went in and took first chair in the orchestra then. I got to play a solo with the orchestra at the Big Spring concert.
Wow.
And the other thing that happened that year, the high school band, the high school music program, put on a musical every year. And they did the show Bye Bye Birdie.
Wow.
And I was in ninth grade, and there were no trumpet players in the high school who could play the first trumpet part to Bye Bye Birdie. It was a real high, demanding part. So they brought me in as a ninth grader.
Wow.
Rue Snyder, still lives in Butler, is a retired teacher from the South Butler District. Rue was the student conductor, so Rue would pick me up in his jalopy and take me to the rehearsals, and I got to play that show, and played every show every year. I was one of the few four-year members of that the musical theater program at the high school. So that really became my life after that. I started to play. I joined the union as a ninth grader and played the music performance trust fund jobs. You remember those?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You'd sign the green sheet.
Yeah.
And I made more money playing my trumpet than all my buddies and friends with their paper routes and everything.
Yeah.
So it ended up being a good financial thing. And it, you know, it was easier money than walking around on a hot day delivering papers all afternoon too. So,
and it's something you enjoyed too.
I enjoyed it. And once you reach a certain level in music on a musical instrument, it becomes satisfying, and you do it for the love of what you're doing.
Right.
And it's not a chore. Nobody has to make you practice. Went through high school, had the opportunity to play in all the different honors bands and the district bands. I was in the Mideast All-Star High School band for my 3 years in high school, and those are high school kids from all over the country that got together in Pittsburgh, Duquesne University.
Well, that must have been exciting.
Well, you got to, you started to hear other exceptional players.
Sure.
And really say, wow, there are really lots of good musicians and players out there. So it was an incentive to work much harder. Well, I got to my senior year, and everybody except me had decided that I was going to become a a full-time professional musician. My dad, my teacher, and I hadn't quite really decided what I wanted to do as a 17, 18-year-old kid. But I did, I got accepted to Duquesne University, got a music scholarship to attend, and attended Duquesne, studied with a guy named Eddie Shiner, who was nationally known, very well-known trumpet teacher. His brother Matty conducted the Duquesne Brass Ensemble, which was also a nationally renowned brass group. And I was, I think, one of the only freshmen, actually, that got to play in Matty's brass ensemble. Fantastic experience. Yeah. And Matty was a real character. He and his brother Eddie have been deceased now for many years. But Matty was a real strict guy, but a lot of it was just show. and being one of the few freshmen in the group, they sort of picked on me. And I'll never forget my first rehearsal with Matty at the Brass Ensemble. It was in the faculty lounge at Duquesne. And Matty was tuning up the group. And he came to me and said, "Play your tuning note." And I played it, and he looked at me and said, "That's one vibration sharp. Pull your slide out." Well, one vibration? A dog doesn't even hear one vibration. So I laughed. I laughed. And Matty took the conductor's book and threw it at me, but had it had it aimed over my head on purpose. But it hit the wall behind me, and music came fluttering out of that thing. And he looked at me, and he pointed, and he said, "Don't you ever laugh at one of my rehearsals. As a matter of fact, I never want to see you smile." So I went into all these rehearsals with a frown on my face. And everybody would tell jokes, and I just sat there with a frown. And everybody in the group had a nickname. Matty gave everybody a nickname in the group. Well, my nickname became Frowns. Oh. And even as an adult, when I would see Matty, I was, you know, a grown adult with a wife and children, he would still refer to me as Frowns. But it was all put on. And after the first semester, you realize that, yeah, everybody gets that treatment. But it was probably the best musical experience I've had in my life, playing with that group and getting to work with such a fantastic musician as Matty. And his brother Eddie wrote most of the arrangements that we played. Yeah. Well, I finished up my year at Duquesne, and I went to live for a few weeks with my best friend, who was also from Butler, a flutist by the name of Don Gibson. Don had graduated from high school a year early and was given the solo flute chair with the Navy Band in Washington, D.C. And so I went and stayed with Don and got to, wow, this guy's my age, and he's got his own car and his own apartment, and regular paycheck, playing with a great band. And I had my trumpet with me so I could practice to get ready to go back to school. And I would go practice every day at the Navy Band Room when they were rehearsing. I would just sit in one of the practice rooms and practice. Well, the conductor of the band walked by and heard me one day. And he opened the door and he said, "Hey, young man, how would you like to become a Navy musician?"
Wow.
And I said, "Sounds good to me." He says, "All right, well, we'll set up an audition." So they auditioned me, and I was accepted into the Navy music program on what's called the delayed enlistment program. So I didn't have to leave until later in the fall. So I did not return back to Duquesne that year, but instead ended up in the Navy. Well, I went to Navy basic training. People look at me and people know me now. I'm not much of an athlete or an outdoorsman. "How'd you ever make it through boot camp?" I played the trumpet. I was the bugler at Great Lakes for basic training, and I played in the dance band there. We had a special company.
Yeah.
And we didn't have to do a lot of the normal stuff that regular basic training recruits have to do. Although we still had to get through it and do all that. So when I got out of basic training, I went to the Navy School of Music, and it's located in Little Creek, Virginia. Fantastic music program. Mm-hmm. All we did was play all day. Just played. We had 4 hours of concert band, a couple hours of jazz band, studied privately with top level musicians, took music theory, And we still had the military stuff. You had to have your hair cut and your shoes shine. So you develop some good discipline.
Yeah.
And for me at that age, that was a perfect thing. So I practiced, got fairly proficient on the instrument just from the amount of time. Met some wonderful musicians at that point. Was a guy named Dan Yoder who became a close friend of mine. Dan's the head of the jazz department at Penn State. Trombonist named Dave Keim, who currently plays lead trombone with the Count Basie Orchestra. So really some good musicians. When I finished that course of study at the Navy School of Music, every graduating student had to do sea duty. So you had to go to sea in a band. And they had good bands on aircraft carriers.
Oh, did they?
Most of the aircraft, probably all the aircraft carriers back then actually had what they called a unit band.
Wow.
Well, I wanted to go someplace where I could actually practice and maybe study with someone. So I said, are there any bands that don't float? It's kind of counts as sea duty. Well, yeah, there were, I think, three. Guam, Kodiak, Alaska, and Hawaii counted as sea duty.
Wow.
So I said, send me to Hawaii. And they sent me to Kodiak, Alaska.
Oh, no.
But Kodiak, I spent a year in Kodiak, and it was a wonderful experience. We had an excellent band. We got to travel. We did a tour on a tugboat around Kodiak Island playing for all the Aleutian Indian villages. They'd fly us to ADAC and P-3 Orion aircrafts. I got interested in aviation and later in life ended up getting my pilot's license, but I got the interest there. But did a lot of playing. I played drums in a combo.
Oh, really?
At a little bar in downtown Kodiak, Alaska.
Your dad would have been happy with that, huh?
Yeah. Well, when I got to the band, you know, the guys in the band said, hey, do you play drums? No, I play trumpet, but my brother plays drums. That's close enough. We need a drummer. So I bought a book called Six Easy Steps to Combo Drumming. I taught myself enough to get by. So did that for a year. And when it was time to leave, they said, okay, you did your sea duty, so we'll send you. And the reason they sent me to Kodiak instead of Hawaii is they needed a lead trumpet player in Kodiak. They didn't need one in Hawaii. So now where do you want to go? You can go anywhere, any United States base where we have a band. Well, I've always wanted to live in New England. So in New London, Connecticut, they had a submarine base there. They had a very good band, concert band. Oh, all right. Well, I'd like to go to New London, Connecticut. They sent me to Seattle. And I got to Seattle. I know you needed a lead trumpet player in Seattle. But again, that ended up being a wonderful experience. I studied with a couple world-class musicians while I was in Seattle. Carlton Welchel was the principal trumpet player with the Seattle Symphony. And a guy named Roy Cummings, who headed the brass department at the University of Washington. I studied with both those guys. Got to do a lot of commercial work while I was there. Got to do some studio work. Got to play in the Seattle Philharmonic, which was the community-based version of the Seattle Symphony. And just had a wonderful 2 years in Seattle. That band played 300 gigs a year.
Wow.
So, you know, Dick, as a musician, you're playing a couple a day. We play a service and then play something in the evening, so many times 3 jobs a day. So worked very well. I also got to hear many, many wonderful musicians and realized that to make it as a musician, the competition and just the struggle that it is, there aren't that many jobs that you can actually make a living at. There are some, but I just didn't think that was in the cards for me. So when I was preparing to get out, I decided I was going to go into another field of endeavor. So I did get out, and I went to school when I got back to Butler and went to Slippery Rock. I think then it was still Slippery Rock State College. It was back in 71. But I ended up majoring in social work. So my degree's in social work with a graduate work in public administration. So I've always worked as usually an agency director. Started off, I was the first director of the Butler County Area Agency on Aging when I graduated from college.
Oh.
But I've always maintained that dual life as a musician. Always played.
Yeah.
Once it's in you, you can't get it out.
No, you have to play. It's in your heart.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's part of you.
And I was fortunate to have jobs where I could finagle my schedule. So if a gig came up, I used to play in the circus band when the Ringling Brothers Circus would come into Pittsburgh. I got to do the circus, play the Ice Capades. Used to do a lot of shows at the Holiday House and some of those places where musicians could make a little bit. I mean, it was a good avocation. I also taught privately for many years, and I've got students all over the country who are playing very successfully
in
professional groups and teaching. One of my passions in this community is playing with the Butler Symphony. And I've played with the Butler Symphony for many, many years. I've been a regular member since 1971 when I got out of the Navy, but I actually played my first concert with that symphony as a 10th grader in 1964. I got to play as a sub, play the third trumpet part. I think I had 8 notes I had to play in that concert. And recently, well, when I say recently, it's 11 years ago, a couple of friends of mine and myself started a group called the Trinity Jazz Orchestra. And this group has really taken off in the area. It's become one of the premier repertory jazz ensembles in Western Pennsylvania. Mm. We do a lot of shows. We do a lot of clinics where we involve kids. We're actually playing a concert on August the 7th at Butler Intermediate High School, which will be a nice show for people if they want to come and hear the sound of the old big bands.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
We actually changed the name of the group from the Trinity Jazz Orchestra to the TMG Big Band, because so many people, when they heard the word jazz, oh, I don't like jazz. I don't want to come and hear that. Oh, do you like the sound of the big bands? Oh, yeah, we love that. Well, that's what it is. It's big band jazz. That's what Glenn Miller played, on the Dorseys. It was big band jazz. So it's now the Trinity Music Group Big Band, TMG Big Band. Do a lot of clinics where we'll bring a famous jazz artist on the national scene in to work with schools. And that person will work with the music groups in the schools, and then at the end of the week they'll do a concert with us and also the school's jazz band. So that's become a passion of mine later in life. I'll turn 66 this year, so I'm trying to slow down my primary career, which is a fundraising consultant. I do capital campaigns for major organizations and institutions. I've done that for the last 20 years. So I'm winding that down, but trying to spend more time in music. I started to teach again. I think I've got 10 private students, 9 or 10 private students that I deal with now, because I enjoy that. I enjoy working with kids and trying to...
But that's what retirement is all about.
Yeah, exactly.
You do what you're passionate for.
Exactly.
That's what we're doing at retirement.
And it's also
great.
Wonderful that you're dealing with the young folks, because they need some good guidance, just even through the music. That's a discipline that they're into, right?
Oh, yeah. And a lot of these kids, a lot of the audiences we play for have never heard a big band.
Right.
A live big band, that's an acoustic-type group that doesn't have a dozen guitars and microphones and speakers and everything. And when they hear it, some of these kids, they'll look up and say, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really something. So the other thing I did in 1974, right when I graduated from college, I got a call from a guy named Buddy Lee, who lived in New Kensington. Buddy Lee he's passed away, he's been deceased for several years, but was one of the prominent big band leaders in the Western Pennsylvania area, and had an orchestra, a 10-piece orchestra. And in 1974, I was fortunate enough to be hired to play with Buddy Lee. And that band worked up until about 3 years ago when Buddy passed away. And that band, back in the 70s and 80s, worked 4 or 5 nights a week when all the ballrooms were going strong.
Yeah.
We would travel to Cleveland, Chicago. We played all the policemen's balls in the pretty much the eastern United States. We did a couple cruises on the Queen Elizabeth II.
Oh, really?
Buddy Lee. And Johnny Costa would go with us as our piano player.
Wow.
Wow.
And I got to sit right beside the open piano and hear Johnny. And got to know him very well. Wonderful musician, wonderful human being. But that band was quite a band. I mean, we had some big-time vocalists, all original arrangements in that band, 1,000 original arrangements by an arranger by the name of Larry Faith, who has passed away. I keep saying it passed away a lot.
The older you get, the more you say it.
I think there's actually, from that original band in 1974 that I was in, I think there's 2 of us still living.
Really? Well, you sure had an exciting life, especially in this music. Well, everything else you do, but the music must be phenomenal for the memories you have and just the joy you have of playing even now.
It's something that I look forward to every day.
And, sure.
And yeah. My wife teases me because I practice every day. I get the horn out.
You still do?
I try to play that thing at least an hour every day.
Really?
If I have a concert or something, I might not do it. But I've got a special mute that I can stick in the end and make it quiet so I don't... So the dogs don't start to bark or anything. I just went out 2 months ago at the age of 65 and bought a brand new trumpet. So now I have 9 trumpets.
9?
Really? Wow.
So, some people collect cars and guitars, right? So.
And I suppose you still have your favorite one, though.
Well, this latest one that I bought is a pretty good horn. Yeah, the technology improves, so you can you can get better horns. You know, trumpet players are always looking for that extra, that one more note at the top of the range, and we'll buy anything to try to do that.
You're always looking for something a little bit better.
Yeah,
I'm that way.
Well, Jim, we're about at the end of our show now, and we were wondering, would you like to tell us about the Butler County Symphony and how you're involved there?
Oh, yeah.
What's going on with the symphony?
I love to talk about the symphony. I actually am on the board of directors of the symphony and helping them with some of their fundraising. But if anyone out there hasn't heard the Butler Symphony, you need to make an effort to come to Butler. And we have a website. You can Google the Butler Symphony and look at our website and see the schedule. But we've got a wonderful young man as our new musical director. Matthew Kramer is his name. Mm. He's the associate conductor of the Buffalo Philharmonic. And Matthew's been with us for a couple years, and he's taken this group to a whole new level.
Wow.
It's a very high-skilled professional orchestra now. We do a series of 6 concerts in our season. We'll start in October. A wonderful Christmas concert. The home of the symphony is Butler Intermediate High School. That's where most of our concerts are played. Although we are trying to move out into the area, we're going to do one of our Christmas concerts at Morris High School this year. But I just encourage people to get on the symphony's website, take a look at the schedule, and consider coming. Bring your kids. I mean, you'll love it. It's great. Low-cost entertainment, free parking. It's easy to get to, so
good quality entertainment too.
Oh yeah, it's just
the kids need to hear things like that too.
Yes.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. We have several friends that go to the symphony all the time from church. So, yeah. So, okay. Well, Jim, thanks so much for being here today. It's just been a pleasure hearing you tell us your whole history on your music life there. So. Don't forget to tune in again next week to hear another show and hear what we have just for you. Dick, tell them how they can listen to any of our archive shows 24/7 on our website.
Sure can, Dana. Go to www.danasradiodiner.com.
And don't forget, there are 2 N's in Dana. Make somebody's day today. Give them a compliment. Thanks for listening. Bye now.
Bye now.